we're holding on Chaf Gimel Amud Beis, about two-thirds of the way down the Amud by the two dots. We were talking about the daughters of Loit, and in that connection we mentioned in connection with the idea of Aveir Lishma, where we said that Yoel did that by seducing Sisera, where it was Lishma, because she thereby saved the whole Jewish people because she got him to sleep and then killed him. So we mentioned Gufa, getting back to what we said before, Amr of Yehuda Amr Rav, La'olam Yasit Adam Torah of a mitzvah Safila Shalom Lishman, a person should always occupy himself with Torah and mitzvahs, even if it's Shalom Lishman. And we said that through Shalom Lishman, he'll eventually come to do them Lishman. And a proof for that is, says Rabbi Yehuda, Shabbishar Aboy Mishnaim Korbanus, Shehikri Balak HaRosha, in the course of the 42 Korbanus that Balak the Rosha brought, because you have three times he asked Bilam to take him, he took Bilam to different places where he thought he could curse the Jewish people. Each place Bilam told him build seven mizbechas over there and offer on each one a parva ayil. So therefore that's 14 korbanos in each of three places, so 42 altogether. So in the schos of the 42 korbanos that Balak brought, Zoch of a Yotzim Menu Rus, he had the schos that Rus was his descendant. So we see that even though he was doing Shalom Lishma, nevertheless, it still has the effect of eventually being Lishma, that through it eventually comes somebody, namely David and his descendants, who do mitzvahs Lishma. An interesting point is, Marshall points out elsewhere on the face of it, you know, we learned yesterday that Tosfos makes a distinction within Shalom Lishma, whether the person is doing Shalom Lishma as in I want to become greater and then more famous or whatever, versus Shalom Lishma where a person is doing it to attack others. Isn't Balak bringing his korbanos over here in order to attack others? He wants Bilam to be able to curse the Jewish people. And the answer is essentially that he was doing it out of fear that in fact the Jewish people would conquer him. That's what he says at the beginning of Parshas Balak, that that's what he's nervous about, and therefore in that sense it can be considered like the first kind of Lishma. Wasn't in other words like he was going out as the aggressor, as he figured that he was being, now you could say, you know, he was projecting, you know, he would have done that in his situation, therefore he attributed that to the Jewish people, not realizing that we have a mitzvah over there, as the Gemara is going to quote in a few lines, that we're not allowed to conquer their land, but you could say he didn't know that, but nevertheless there is at least a certain, it's not the worst kind of Shalom Lishma, in other words. Okay. Getting back,
are you actually saying that if you do a mitzvah that's not lishman, and someone else will benefit even after several generations, it's considered as it is lishma?
No, what I'm saying is when Tosfos said earlier that shalom lishman, as in when a person does a mitzvah in order to attack others, that's not only is that not considered a mitzvah at all, but elsewhere the Gemara says it would be better if he wasn't born. Marsha is saying that doesn't necessarily apply to our case, because even though Balak is doing it with aggressive intentions towards the Jewish people, he's doing it out of what he thought was self-defense. So that's different. So it would be the first kind of Shalom Lishma, where, for example, a person is doing a mitzvah in order to become better known, in order to become famous or whatever, which we said to begin with. I mean, it's not the best kind of mitzvah, but it's an acceptable mitzvah. We certainly say that a person should do such a mitzvah, and eventually from that he'll come Lishma.
Okay, but the problem is whether or not it's lishma is not as relevant as asking whether or not lishma means yotze or not yotze.
You're yotze no matter what. The question would be what we talked about yesterday, for example, even the person who ate the Korban Pesach, l'shem achila gasa, again, as long as it's something that could be called eating, not where he's revolted by the sight of food, then it can be called a mitzvah. We're not talking about that. What was that we talked about earlier? Now what we're saying is that a person should do a mitzvah lishma. If he does it shalom lishma, it's still not so bad. Eventually from it he'll come lishma. As opposed to, Tosfos makes a distinction on Amud Aleph, that if the shalom lishma is that he's actually using it to harm and attack other people, then that's not, then you could say maybe technically he's yotze the mitzvah, but that's not the kind of mitzvah he should be doing at all, and it would be better if he hadn't been born rather than doing a mitzvah like that. That's what it is. All right, let's go on.
It seems to be an ambiguous statement because on the one hand, Tosfos says that he is yotze, but on the other hand, he says it should have been better
that
he wasn't born.
And Tosfos doesn't say he is Yotze. I'm adding that. I mean, the fact is, a person does a mitzvah and intends thereby by doing that mitzvah somehow he's going to harm somebody else. I mean, on the face of it, he was still Yotze the mitzvah. If he takes lul of an esrog on Sukkos and thereby he's doing that in order to be able to say to somebody else, look what I am and look what a nothing you are that you didn't do that. The pashtus is he was still Yotze the mitzvah. It's just a very wrong way of doing it. And we're saying that it would be better if he hadn't been born rather than do mitzvahs like that. But, alright, anyway, let's go on. We can talk about that later if you want. The Gemara continues. Getting back to Lot's daughters. How do we know that Hashem doesn't cut off, meaning withhold even the reward for nice talk? In other words, even a person is, you may have two people who are doing the same thing, but one of them speaks about it in a more refined way, Hashem rewards them for that also. How do we know? We see by how Hashem later on talked about Moav and Ammon to the Jewish people. The Ila Bechira, the Karise Moav, now the elder daughter of Lot called her son Moav, which means May of, which means that she's openly saying, this came from my father. Which is a chutzpahdika thing to say, that everybody should now know what kind of znus was done over here. So generations later, Hashem tells Moshe, Al totzaratz Moav, al tisgor bom milchama. Don't harass Moav, and don't provoke war against them. Now, what's the word milchama adding over there? Al tisgor bom, don't provoke them, would be enough. It means milchama hu deloy. You're not allowed to go to actual war against them. But Hashem is saying to them, you are allowed to trouble them. Rashi on the Pasuk mentions, for example, you can appear in front of them wearing all your weapons and gear and frighten them as though you're going to attack. Elsewhere, the Gemara says you can force them into Angaria, which is government service, government labor. But all you can't do is actually start a war against them. But anything short of that, you could. The Ilu Tseira, but then when it comes to the younger daughter of Lot, the Karise Ben Ami, she calls her son Ben Ami, which just means the son of my people, so she doesn't specify that it was from her father, so that's a more sneeristic way of talking. So Hashem tells Moshe, Al Tetsurim, Al Tisko Bam, don't trouble them, and don't harass, and then don't provoke them, meaning don't even harass them at all. Don't appear in front of them in weapons, don't force them into Angaria, that sort of thing. So Ammon comes out better because their ancestress spoke more properly. There is, by the way, I think I've mentioned before, a story that Moshe Feinstein told, which is printed in the introduction to the last volume of Igros Moshe, that there was a balabas in his city of Luban in Russia, who one time became very sick, his tongue swelled up, he could hardly breathe. He calls for Moshe. He tells him last Shabbos was Parshas Vayera. I was talking about the daughters of Lot, and I was putting them down. What a chutzpahdika thing they did! What do you mean how could the elder one call him by such a name, Moav? Like the Gemara is saying over here, even our descendants were punished for it. Anyway, that night he said two old women came to me in a dream. They told me we're the daughters of Lot, and they said, "We'll tell you why we did that. Because after all, we turn up pregnant, we have children. Everybody knows we weren't married. We could have claimed that the father is anybody we want. Nobody would suspect that we, the nieces of Abraham, and great nieces of Abraham, are going to do such a disgusting thing as to have relations with our own father. We could have, if we wanted, we could have claimed that they were fathered by Hashem, and we could have started a whole new religion with them, like the Christians did later with their guy. We Davka named the elder one says, we named him Moav and Ben Ami, respectively, because we wanted to demonstrate to the whole world, no, there's no such thing. A child is always fathered by a human father, even if you have to openly admit that it was your own father, never by Hashem. There's no such thing. So it's a limud schus on them that they did that, but still, our Gemara is saying that she still apparently could have found a better way. Anyway. On the other hand, continues the Gemara, Amar Piba Oven, Amar Bisham and Kurcha, La'olam Yachtim Adam Ledvai Mitzvah. A person should always be eager to do the mitzvah as soon as possible. I skipped a line before, when he said that the 42 korbanos of Balak HaRasha, he had this source that Rus, Va'amar Rav Yosi Ber Chanina, Rav Yosi Ber Chanina says, Rus, Bas B'noi Shal Eglon, Melech Moav Haisa, Rus was the granddaughter, or Tosfos says maybe not literally the granddaughter, but a descendant of Eglon, the king of Moav, who, the Gemara is assuming over here, was in turn a descendant of Balak. So it comes out, therefore, that Rus was a descendant of Balak. Anyway, getting back to where we were, Amar Rav Chiya Ba'Avin, Amar Rav Yishoven Karcha, La'olam yaktim adam ledvar mitzvah. A person should always be eager to do a mitzvah as soon as possible. And here we have with what these girls were doing. Again, they thought in their circumstances that it's a mitzvah since they need to repopulate the world. In the course of one night, the elder one went ahead of the younger one, to have relations with Loi. She had the course to be four generations ahead in the Jewish people when it comes to kingship. Namely, so Rus becomes a Giyoris, and she and Boaz have a son together, Oved. Then Oved has a son, Yishai, who has a son, David, who has a son, Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech marries among his wives as Naamah HaAmonis, so Gioris from Ammon, and then her son is Rechavam, so that way the Ammonim enter into the Jewish royal family. So you see that Rus got there four generations ahead of Naamah, and Rus is descended from the elder daughter, because she's from Moab, and Naamah is from Ammon.
Exactly, the Maharsha explains
elsewhere in Bava Kamma that each one has a Mila and Chisarin. On the one hand, the elder daughter had the Mila that she went first. On the other hand, she had the Chisarin that she spoke about it in an unsneistic way. So therefore, the fact that she went first is why her descendants joined the Jewish people and joined the Jewish royal family first. On the other hand, the fact that she spoke in a chutzpahdik way like that, in an unsneistic way like that, is why her descendants were more open to being harassed and whatever by the Jewish people rather than her younger sisters. Okay. Mishnah says, Ha'isha shenodra b'nazir, we learned this mission of the other day in connection with the whole discussion about megas, gayas, and then miyaka akar. So ha'isha shenodra b'nazir, a woman made a neder of nazirus, the frishas behemta, and she designated her animal as a korban, and then her husband was made for the neder. So it depends who the animal belonged to. Im shaloi hoisa behema, if the animal all along was his, animals, plural, whatever, then they can go and graze out together with the rest of the flock, because she had no right to be makdish in the first place, so it would be the equivalent of being makdish somebody else's animal, and in that case, there's no kedusha chal on it. As we'll learn in the Gemara, it's one thing if she does in the end have to bring the karbanis, then the husband is meshubad to bring it on her behalf, or for her to be able to take her husband's animals and be able to bring them. Therefore, they would have kedusha. But here, where her husband was made for her, and therefore there's no nizirus, then it turns out that it wasn't necessary.
Same way, behem stuff doesn't mean that her own private just means.
So behem, right? That's what it says. Im shaloi hoisa behem, right? It's behem ta in the first words of the mission didn't mean her own animal, just means an animal for her korbanos. So yeah. So that's what we brought that the other day in the Gemara. We were discussing the question of whether Miyaka Ocker or Mega's guy is. We really focused over there more on the second part of the Mishnah about what happens if the animals were hers. So our Gemara is going to explain that you can say the husband is makna animals to her for things she needs, because he has to be makna her animals for korbanos, but only when she needs them. Here it turns out that she doesn't need it. And really, whether we say Miyaka Ocker, or whether we say Megas Guy, is either way it really works. Because the fact is, there's no Korbanos necessary now. It would be one thing if she became Tomei, where there you need Korbanos for that. But here you really have that, here it's really the end of the, it's the end of the, it would have been the end of the Nazirus, but there is no end of the Nazirus, because in fact it was Mofer. So therefore, that's it. So no korbanos at all.
And they could go run wild. They're free.
They're free to do whatever. The im shalah hoisa behema. If the animal belonged to her, then we have to consider. Now there are three different. And we'll see in the Gemara on the days how that's possible, how you work that out. But anyway, then you have three different animals that you have to consider. Three korbanos that a nazir brings at the end of their nazirus are a chatas, an ola, and a shlomim. Earlier, by the way, we were focusing more on the case we brought from Brises. If she becomes Tomei and she has to bring three korbanos, what's the deal with those korbanos? In particular, we mentioned the idea that she may have to bring that the chatas would be brought anyway because it's only a bird. You can bring a chatas for a suffix. Rabbi Lazar HaKapra says she needs kapara anyway. But here we're talking about she's a nazir toher. She went through her. She didn't yet. I mean, the husband was made for her, so in the end there's no nazir. But she hadn't yet become Tom. So then
she is if the husband is not being made for the Naziris, then the assumption is that she can use his animal.
Yeah, that's what the Gemara is going to talk about that point. Yeah, the Gemara is going to talk about the husband is responsible for korbanos on behalf of his wife. Yeah,
but it's not like he has to be mekayim that.
No, even if he's not mekayim, if he's not mekayim, he just waits until the end of the day, then the neder is automatically mekayim, right? So chatas tomus. So the chatas is going to have to be left to die, as we talked about the other day. You have the concept of chatois hamesis, and here, in effect, it's considered. We talked about the other day that it's considered like a chatas shemesu bala. It's considered the equivalent of a chatas whose owner died, because now, in effect, that's it. She's gone. There's no Naziros anymore. We talked about also the idea that since Rabbi Elazar HaKapra says that a Nazir anyway needs a degree of Kapara, that degree of Kapara that they need is strong enough for this animal to still be considered a Chatas, and therefore, but it can't be offered, because a Chatas Behema, you can't bring Allah Safik, and you can't bring for weak reasons like that. Therefore, it ends up being a Chatas HaMesa. We talked about the other day also, the Mefarish explained differently. He said that the whole concept of Chatois HaMesis applies only to animals, not to birds. Which not all the Rishonim agree with that. So the Chatas has to be left to die. The Ola Tikrav Ola. The Ola is brought as a regular Ola, because an Ola you can bring voluntarily. Tosfos asks, we learned the other day that the Ola is we discussed the question between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel, Brosh, Rabbi Yechon, and Broka, whether the Ola is considered part of her Kapara, or whether it's something more completely voluntary. So if you say that's part of her Kapara, and therefore Rabbi Shmuel had said that no Korbanos really are necessary if her husband was made for, then why are we bringing the Ola? And the answer is because it's one thing that by a Nazir Tomei needs Kapara, and he holds that the Ola there is also part of the Kapara, and therefore you can talk about actually just the opposite. He says you do need to bring the Ola as well, because once she's bringing her Kapara for having become Tomei, then you need to bring the Ola as well. But the Chachamim hold that the Ola is in that case is not really part of the Kapara. It's part of the process, but it's not really part of the Kapara. But here you're not talking about Nazir Tomei. Here you're talking about Nazir Tomer, so it's different. So the Ola is still brought. And Shlomim Tikrav Shlomim, the animal that was supposed to be for the Shlomim, is brought as a Shlomim, but unlike a regular Shlomim, which is eaten for 2 days and the one night in between, here the Shlomim of a Nazir, we mentioned it in Morning Davening, that Toda of El Nazir, Kodshim Kalim, Shrikasim B'chol Mokam Azara, and we say they can only be eaten for 1 day and one night. Xeris HaKosov, that the Shlomim of a Nazir and also a Toda, which is also a type of Shlomim, have to be eaten for only the 1 day and the one night, and then they become Nazir. So here we still treat it like that. It still is eaten for only one day, like the shlomim of as if it was the shlomim of a nazir. The ainan tounim lachem. However, you don't have to bring the bread with them. We're going to learn later on in the sechta that when a nazir brings his korbanos tara along with the shlomim, he brings 20 loaves of bread. But here since there's no nazirus in the end, then the korban is still brought, but there's no bread accompanying it. There's no bread accompanying it. Tosfos discusses the question also. First of all, even if we say Baal Miyaka Oker, even if we say the husband uprooted the nederus as though it still never existed, but still, since they were Makudish for Shalmei Nazir, then therefore they retain that status. And they still have to be brought as a Shlomim and eaten as though they were Shalmei Nazir.
Because she separated before
he was made for right. Now another thing we're going to learn later in the Masechta, another unique thing that's done with the Shlomim of a Nazir is that you cook it. One of the chambers in the Ezra's Nashim was meant for the Nazir to shave his hair and to cook his korban, and then you take the cooked leg of the animal and you wave it together with some of the bread and whatever and the chos of the shoyt, and then you give that to the kohen. So now, do you have to do that with this one? Do you do the zroya? So, So Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities. Does it mean that later on the Gemara is going to say that Eid Lahem Zroya, that the din of Zroya doesn't apply? So does that mean that you still have to give the Zroya to the Kohen, but you just don't waive it? Or maybe what it means is you don't cook it and then give it to the Kohen, rather you give it to the Kohen raw. But maybe either way, you do have to give him the Zeroya somehow or other.
If you're doing the Korban anyhow.
If you're doing the Korban anyhow, yeah. But I mean, you have to give him the Chazavish. Because the point is that now it becomes sort of halfway between a regular Shlomim and a Shlomim of a Nazir. If it was a Shlomim of a Nazir, it would have two special things. It would have three special things with it. The deadline for eating it, the bread, and the Zeroya. Now we're saying there's no bread. On the other hand, the deadline is shorter, like Shalmei Nazir. So now the question is, what about the Zeroya?
Is it a problem to cook a Zeroya?
Well, the problem is, actually, it's interesting. You know, elsewhere, the Gemara talks about the concept, where do we know the concept of Bitul B'Shishim? Well, okay, it's Medir Abanan, but where did the Chachamim get the idea of Dat B'Shishim? And the explanation is, when you cook this ram of the Nazir, this Korban Shlomim, then and you're cooking the leg together with it. Now the leg is going to be given to the Kohen. So it's also to Zorim. And yet you're cooking them together and one is absorbing flavor from the other. The Chachamim estimated that the Zroya amounts to 1/60th of the bulk of the animal. And we see that you can cook them together, and it doesn't. Then the flavor that comes from the Zeroya is not acid the rest of the meat. So the Chachamim use that as a basis for the concept of Bitul B'Shishim. So the implication is that otherwise, if you don't have the special din of Zeroya, maybe you shouldn't be cooking them together because, even though you cook them together, we're not worried about the flavor because it's bottle. But other things being equal, it sounds like if you don't have a reason to be cooking it together with it, then you shouldn't. You should take it off raw and give it to the Kohen, like you said. It's kind of only b'di'evet, yeah.
That would be the taste going into the...
Into the rest of the meat. Into the rest of the meat of the animal. The rest of the meat would be absorbing some taste from this Zeroya.
You don't cook. You cook it separate.
No, that's the point. The point is, with a regular ale nazir, what you do is you cook it whole. You cook it whole.
The whole behemoth.
Right. And then you take the Zeroya b'sheli, you take the cooked Zeroya, and you give it to the Kohen.
In this case,
we're saying that's what Tosfos is discussing. Maybe not, because after all, this is not a real Shalmei Nazir. So does it mean that you do cook it, and then you give it to the Kohen, you just don't waive it? Or does it mean that maybe you don't cook it together with the ram, maybe it becomes also all by itself, and you just have to give it to the Kohen, and you can't cook it together with the rest of the animal?
That taste we're talking about is going into the chalas?
Not chalas, it's going into the rest of the meat. The rest of the meat.
So what's the problem with it's only a Kohen eating anyway?
That's the point. The rest of the meat, the Yisrael eats. The rest of the meat of the Korban, the Yisrael eats. It's only the Zeroya, it's a Shlomit. It's only the Zeroya that the Kohen eats.
That's what we're talking about the chalas.
Yeah, yeah, no. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Now, what happens if instead of animals, what if she had money and it was unspecified? So she had put together money and said, this is going to be for my korbanos, but she didn't specify yet this amount, these coins are going to go for the chatas, these for the oila, etc. So then, yipul the nedava, we take all that money. Now, again, her husband was mefer for the, so now her husband was, by the way, as far as the Ein and Tornim Lechem, Tosfos points out also that even if she had already designated the bread, you would have to still be poided. You'd still have to redeem it from Hekdesh if you want to eat that bread. Maybe you could say the husband uprooted the nether. We still don't want people to think that Hekdesh can become unhekdesh without being poided. And of course, if Nega's guy is, then anyway, you could be poydet. You don't say that it's too late to be poydet, because then that kedushas haguf until you shech the korban. Up until then, it only has kedushas damim, and some of the kedushas damim you can be poydet. So either way, you're in a situation where you could be poydet. It's not too late to be poydet, but on the other hand, you have to.
The bread from the.
Some hoyla moistrum and yipul in a dava. You put that money in the dava, which is one of the boxes or six boxes they had in the Mishmikdash, where the money in it would go for kayetz and mizbeach, where they would bring korbanos oyla when the mizbeach is otherwise being unused. So the general rule, a lot of times when you have money of a korban, the korban is not able to be brought, there's a suffix or what have you, many times it goes to the dava. continues the Mishnah, Mois Mefurashin. What if she had explicitly designated money? So she had a bundle that this is designated for the Chathas, this for the Oila, etc. Then, Dmei Chathas Yochol Yamamelach. The money for the Chathas is going to have to be thrown into the Yamamelach, which is the equivalent of if it was an animal leaving it to die. Because again, the point is you're not supposed to be having Hana from it. You're not allowed to have hanah from it, but if you did, you haven't committed me'ilah, because not also daraisa, because since it's going to be thrown into the Yam HaMelech, it can't really be called kodshim anymore. The same thing, by the way, Tosfos points out, the same thing is true as far as the chatas amesa. You have to leave it to die, but if you were to have hanah from it, again, it would be also true midirabanan, but you're not, so you couldn't be committing me'ilah by it. Me'ilah would only apply to something that's actually going to be brought as a korban, and here, this animal or this money is not. Dmei Oila Yavir Oila, the money of the Oila will still be brought as an Oila, just like you said before, if there was an actual animal that would have been brought as an Oila. Umoil and Behan, and if a person uses that money for other purposes, they've committed Me'ilah, just like with any money of Hekdesh. Yeah, because it's going to be used for that. Dmei Shlomim Yavir Shlomim, the money of the Shlomim is used to buy a Shlomim. There, by the way, Me'ilah doesn't apply. Me'ilah applies to Shlomim only when it comes to the Emurim, only when it comes to the facts of them that are brought on the Mizbeach. The rest of it, since it's eventually going to be eaten by the owners and the Kohenim, then Me'ilah doesn't apply to it while it's alive, or right after it's shechted. So, and again, those shlomim that you buy with these money would be like the hybrid shlomim that we talked about before, where on the one hand, they have the deadline of the Shalmei Nazir, but on the other hand, you don't bring bread with them, and you have choice for the discussion of what you do as far as the Zeroyah with them.
So the
Chatas money gets wasted, but the other ones do end up being brought as carbon. Yeah, no.
Wow.
Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Man Tana de Baal Lo Mishtakva. In the beginning of the, which Tana is it that holds that the husband is not Meshubad to his wife for Korbanos, meaning he's not obligated to buy Korbanos on her behalf? And therefore, so we're saying in the Mishnah that there's a difference that if the animals belong to him, then we say that they all now become cholin, and there's no chatas amesa, and there's no bringing the ola, and so forth. So which Tana would be saying that, and that therefore you would make that distinction? If he was meshubad to her, there'd be no difference whether it's her animal or his animal. Omer of Chista Rabbanon. That has to be according to the Rabbanon who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. Because the Isak Dadach Rabbi Yehuda, if you were to hold that the Mishnah is like Rabbi Yehuda, as the Gemara is going to bring a Braisa in a moment, I might take it to the Eder. You would have to ask why in the first case of the Mishnah, how could the animal go out and graze in the rest of the flock? After all, to begin with, the husband was Meshubad to his wife, that he's obligated to provide Korbanos on her behalf for whenever she needs them. And therefore, the fact is, there was a period of time when she was obligated to these Korbanos. The same way as we said, if they're her animals, even though now the neder is mufer, there's still enough residual kedusha on them to require that she brings that she does something with them, and therefore the chatas becomes mesa and so forth. If the husband is meshubad to bring korbanos for her, to provide korbanos for her, then the same din should apply.
It wouldn't be different if we say.
Wouldn't be different whether it belongs to her or to his. That's the point.
If you say magus, or you say okay, right?
No. So if you say so, that the Gemara had mentioned that the other day. We said that if we said miyaka okar, then we can understand that we can understand. we said the other way around. We asked if miyaka okar, then even if the animals belong to her, why shouldn't they just go out to full end? Shouldn't it be magus guy? So we answered over there because we said that after all, we have two different girsois over there. She doesn't need kapara, or she does need a degree of kapara, and therefore it becomes a chatas amesa. In the end, the Gemara did end up saying megas gaiz, so therefore it's very straightforward to understand. When she designated these korbanos, she actually did require them. Later on, it turns out that she didn't. But even if we said miyaka oko, the Gemara found a way to make it work. Yeah. The Tanya, so we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yehuda, Odom may be korban osher al ishtar. A husband brings a korban for a rich person on his wife's behalf. So let's say, for example, Tosfos gives the example that his wife is chayav a korban ol of a yod. You have certain averus where when a person does them, not so much suffix, but for example, you have a person swore a shvua, and then it was a false shvua, or they violated their shvua. You have If they were tame and went into the Mishnah and didn't realize it, there's a couple of cases. Anyway, the din is the person has to bring a special kind of chatas, which is ola v'yoda. The value goes up and down. If they're rich, they bring a sheep for a korban. If they're poorer, they bring two birds, one for an ola, one for a chatas. And if they're the poorest of all, dali dalos, then they bring a korban mincha, which is only flour, no oil, and no lavona. So now, what happens if the wife herself has no assets, but the husband is rich? So Rabbi Yehuda says he's going to be required to supply a rich person's korban on her behalf. Same thing the pastress would apply if she when she gives birth. When a woman gives birth, again, if she's rich, then she brings a sheep and a bird as a chatas and an oila. And if she's poor, then she brings two birds. Same thing. So Rabbi Yehuda says he's going to have to bring the rich ones. V'chein kol korban nisei ashi chayevus. And the same thing Rabbi Yehuda says, any other korban that she has to bring, he has to bring on her behalf. Or he has to supply on her behalf. Shekach kos avla, because this is what he writes for her in the ksuba. Kol achrayis the islich alayim in kadmas tana, any responsibility that you have Olai is on me, in kadmas dina, even from beforehand. So even if she was chayiv and a korban from beforehand, so not children, but let's say for example a korban olav yodet. Let's say she had done the avera where that makes her required to bring a korban olav yodet before she was married. Now they're married. So now Rabbi Yehuda says, well, the husband can't say, well, when you did the avera, we weren't married, so tough luck, you bring your own korban. No, he's required to supply the korban. Tosfos points out, So Tosfos points out two things, sorry. First of all, Tosfos says this would only be korbanos that she's chayev, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. And second of all, actually, Tosfos says no. When we say min kadmas dina, Tosfos actually says that it still doesn't mean that it applies to korbanos that she became chayev in before the nisuin. Let's say it could mean after the kiddushin or whatever, yeah. But it does before they got married. Well, he says kodim shenises, so anything from before they got married, he's not obligated in. So in that case, minkad mastana would just mean that anything that you were chayiv in beforehand, before you tell me about it or something, then I obligate myself to bring. So the point is, in other words, that Rabbi Yehuda is saying the husband is obligated to supply the korbanos. Well, if according to Rabbi Yehuda, there would be no distinction in our Mishnah between whether the animals belong to the husband or the wife. Either way, they're meshubad to the husband, to the wife's korbanos. The fact that we have that distinction can only be according to the Chachamim. On the other hand, Rava Amar after the tamer Rabbi Yehuda, you could even say our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Tosfos brings actually that, first of all, the different girsa, not that he writes to her in the ksuba, and then you could say, kadmas dina means that he's accepting on himself responsibilities from earlier, but rather the other way around. That she, when she receives her ksuba, eventually, she writes him out a receipt saying that I received my ksuba payment, and all achrayus that I had that was incumbent on you, min kadmas dina, from beforehand, I am loyal. So in other words, we see that because he's meshubad, she needs to explicitly mention it at the time of gerushin. So that's why Tosfos is learning, not that he's saying that he's obligated in korbanos that she was chayiv in from before they got married or before anything. Even from what was before they got married, apparently Tosfos is saying that even if during the time of the erusin, she became obligated in some korban, let's say she did a shvuas bitri or went into this mikdash tamei or whatever, still, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, the husband wouldn't be responsible for that. But after they get married, then we'll say the husband is responsible for any korbanos of his wife's, and later on we see that when she's paid her ksuba, she actually has to write him out something that says that I'm moichel on any future and on you having to pay off any future ones. So in other words, if she was chayiv faker, when she was chayiv in a korban while they were married and she didn't have a chance to bring it beforehand, and now they got divorced and she's writing out a shover to him to say that I received it, then she's saying, fine, I'm not holding you responsible for bringing my korbanos for bringing this korban that I incurred while we were still married. But up until then, he is, yeah.
Even though the chiyuv started
when she was married, right. On the other hand, the Rosh talks about the Rosh talks about similarly to Tosfos brings from Gemara and Baba Basra that if she incurred the chiyuv of the korban, before they got married, then yeah, the husband is not responsible for it. Anyway, the point is, so again, according to Rav Chista, Rav Yehuda cannot possibly be the Tana of our Mishnah, because according to him, there's no reason to distinguish between whether the animals belong to him or to her. Rav Amar Afilu Tamer Rav Yehuda. Rav says no. You can even say our Mishnah goes according to Rav Yehuda. Ki Meshabed law, because you could say when is the husband Meshubed to his wife? The Milsa Ditzricha law, only with something that she needs. The Milsa Deloit Tzricha law, when it comes to something she doesn't need, then no, he doesn't have a Shibud. So in this case, he was made for the Neder. So therefore, we can't say so. There's no Neder anymore. Whether we say Neder's guy is, whether we say Miyaka Ocher, the fact is there's no Nezirus anymore for her to have to bring the Korbanus. Therefore, we can say he's not Meshubed to her to still supply animals that are now going to have to be a Chatas HaMesa and a voluntary Ola and so forth. No. Because she doesn't actually require them.
And she has no funds.
So that's it. So then she would have to. So no. And then we said nothing happens. Takes the tit of Eder. The Korbanus just go out and graze. In other words, then it's the equivalent of not having designated Korbanus at all. What would happen if she had taken a Nedu of Nezirus, not designated any animals or any money yet for the Korbanus, and then the husband is Mefer? Nothing happens. Same thing over here, because the animals didn't belong to her. Therefore, he's not the Shubud that the Kedusha that she put on them should have any effect.
Only if
the animals belong to her. That's what we say.
Right, but if she prepared animals, then
that's the thing. Rava is saying even Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that the husband is meshubed to his wife as far as her korbanus, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that when she doesn't need the korbanus, then nothing happens. And here, in the end, she doesn't need them because there's no nezirus after all.
Is the husband able to be made for just her choice of this animal?
The pashtus not, because that wouldn't be inri nefesh, because there's no affliction to her in it. It probably wouldn't be dvarim shebeina levena, because it's not something that directly affects their marital relationship. So therefore, there may not be a basis for him to be made for that part of the neder anyway. Okay. Ikadamri, another version of the discussion goes like this. It starts off Mantana, who is the Tana of our Mishnah, Amar Rav Chista Rav Yehuda. So now, in the second version, it's the other way around. Rav Yehuda, Rav Chista starts with the assumption that our Mishnah would be according to Rav Yehuda. The Chi Meshabed Lo, the Milsa Ditzricha Lo, because we could say, like Rav Svara, he's only Meshubed to her in something that she needs, the Milsa Ditzricha Lo, but not something that she doesn't need. And Rav Chista says, Fakev, to Irab Banan, if you were to think that our Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim, Loi Meshabed Lo Klal, then he's not meshubad to her at all, and therefore there's nothing even to talk about as far as the animals being kaddish. Whether he was mefer or whether or not, our Mishnah is saying if he was mefer, then the animals go out and graze, implying that if he wasn't mefer, then eventually those animals are brought as korbanos. Well, in the second version of Chista is saying, according to the Chachamim, why should it be? They're his animals, they're not her animals. So how does she have the right? If I went over to your flock of animals and I said, I'm going to bring this sheep as my chatas, nothing happens. So why should it be any different whether the husband was made for her or not?
He has to support her.
He has to support her, but that's not the same thing as bringing her korbanos. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we learn from the wording of the Ksuba that he's chayiv in her korbanos. The Chachamim disagree. According to the Chachamim, we go according to her status. If she has money, then she brings the korban of a rich person. If not, then she brings the korban of a poor person. So in the second version, Rav Chista is saying that the Mishnah can only be like Rav Yehuda. And Rav Chista continues, Ela Heichi Dami de Meshabed La, how would we be able to understand the Mishnah that after all, conceivably, these animals are brought as korbanos if he's not made for her? The Mishnah is implying that the korbanos are brought. Going to Achniela, for example, if the husband was Machna the animals, if the husband was Machna to her animals. Now, by the way, the Rosh points out, we don't mean that he actually was Machna who the animals and said, you can use these for your korbanos of Nezirus. Because then obviously he's Makayim the Neder anyhow. Obviously with that, he's implying that I approve of the Neder, then he can't be made for anything. We're talking about where he just gave her the animals as a gift without specifying why. So he gives her animals. Let's say he says later on, if you eventually need animals for korbanos for whatever purpose, you'll be able to use these.
First he broke off to her.
We're talking about that first she made a neder of Nezirus. He gave her at some point, whether before that or after that, he gave her animals, and then this way she has available animals for any future korbanos she may need. Now,
does that mean the kind of unit?
No, because then that's the thing, because he didn't mention the Nazirus specifically. And it could even be that he gave her the animals beforehand, before she ever took the neder of Nazirus. Whereas we learned in the Dorim, you can't have a kaim and neder before it exists. But whatever, the point is, it doesn't matter. The point is, either way, he didn't actually say this is for your Nazirus, so that doesn't amount to a kiyum. Now, if he's made for the neder, then we can talk about whether the animals are hers or his. The kiyum da akne, they'll have it the nafsha. Once he's machmet to her, it becomes hers. But then after all, then there still can't be the distinction of the Mishnah between whether the animals belong to him or her. Either way, then, in effect, they belong to her. Therefore, says Rav Chista, looking at it that from that point of view, the Mishnah can only follow Rav Yehuda. And again, Rava Omar, Rava says, Afilo Tamer Rabbanan, not necessarily. You could even say that our Mishnah goes like the Chachamim, because again, you could say, Ki Machnila Nami, Bemilsa Ditzvichala. You could say that the husband is Machnila the animals to her, not completely unconditionally, only if she actually needs it. The Milsa Ditzvichala Le Machnila, he's not Machnila to her if she doesn't actually end up needing it. So since in the end it turns out she doesn't need these Torbanas, then we can say that retroactively all along, the husband had not been Machnila. These animals to her, and therefore we could say that even the Chachamim would agree that would agree that there's a distinction between whether the animals belong to him, where then there's no kedusha on them at all, versus when they belong to her, where then we said the chatas is a chatas amesa and so forth. So you could make the Mishnah work like the Chachamim as well.
If it was she had general components available that if she would need for anything, and then she takes the zeros upon herself, then she would be mechuyev.
Then she would be mechuyev to bring them to Pashtus, because then they're full-fledged hers, yeah. What we're talking about is that he gave her, to begin with, animals, telling her, in the future, any korbanos that you need can come from these animals. So now, it turns out, she doesn't need these korbanos, because it was made for her. So that's not included. So therefore, to begin with, when he gave her these animals, they're not nikna to her for that purpose. So therefore, that's it. So then there's no kedusha on them. They're still considered to belong to the husband.
It depends according to the Rabban or Rav.
That's the thing. That's what Rav Chista is saying, that it doesn't hold of that distinction, so he holds the Mishnah can only be according to Rav Yehuda. Rava is pointing out that even the Chachamim would say that there can be a case where the husband is machner to her and a case where the husband is not machner to her, and therefore that'll make a difference. Therefore, you can still have the distinction of our Mishnah between whether it belongs to him or whether it belongs to her. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, we said if the animal belonged to her, so we said the chatas is going to have to be left to die, and the ola is going to be offered. But the question is, how does she come to have animals of her own anyway that are not her husband's? All this time we've been talking about the animals belong to the husband, and either according to the Yehuda, the husband is meshubah to supply them, and according to the Chachamim, we can say like he made a conditional deal with her about when he's giving them to her. But now we're talking about the animals outright belong to her. How does she have that in the first place? Ha'amit mashakona ishakona baila. Didn't you say, don't we learn that whatever a woman acquires, her husband acquires?
But here, if he gave it to her,
That's the thing. We learned in the Nedarim, actually, that you can even have that a husband gives something to his wife, it's not necessarily unconditionally hers. We talked about that at the end of Nedarim. We had a short sugya about that. About when somebody else gives a wife a gift, or even when the husband himself gives her a gift, is it meant to be unconditional? Is it meant to be that's hers no matter what? On the face of it, Masha Kamsi Isha Kamsa Baila. So the answer is Amara Papasha Kamatsata Mi Isasa. You could give an answer where she saved from her dough. So in other words, her husband gives her money for food, and the expectation is, as we learned in Ksubas, there's a certain amount of food that she's going to be eating per week. So now, let's say that she saves from that. She doesn't eat that full amount, so therefore, over time, she saves up a little here and a little there. So now, eventually, she has money to buy an animal, and in that case, it actually taka belongs to her.
And again, if the husband just wants to give her spending money, that would come with strings attached?
So that's the thing we talked about in Nedarim, that yeah, you can have, for example, does he actually have to say to her that this is for you to buy food, or that this is for you to buy yourself jewelry or whatever, or can he just give it open ended and it still works as well? We had a discussion about that in Nedarim.
Works as well,
that it should actually belong to her outright. Do we say, in other words, it only belongs to her only if she's using it for food, let's say, but not if she's using it for something else, or can we say that it just belongs to her outright?
So the Manda Amar that he has to specify, basically, if he said, then it wouldn't work if he just says, like, here, it is like per year, no one's attached.
So that's the thing. So Tosfos brings over here from a Gemara and Ksubas, Moisa Mizonis Labachal, that the husband, that the, you have the extra amount. If the husband gives her money for Mizonis and there's extra, then it reverts to him. So Tosfos first says that, Tosfos first gives an answer that we're talking about over here. We, to begin with, he told her, see, Masi, a diaphragm is in a site. You support yourself. You do your own work, spinning wool or whatever, and earn money from that, and you support yourself. So now, if there's anything extra, if she gets more from that, then obviously she gets to keep it. That's one answer. Then Tosfos brings another answer. Is that what do we mean, most of Mizonis Labal is, for example, where prices went down. So now the same money buys her more food. So now we're saying that there's extra. But here we're talking about that she saved on her own. The prices are still the same, but she ate less than usual. That belongs to her. But yeah, returning to as far as if the husband gives her, right. So it's not so simple. As we learned in Nedarim, it may be that he actually has to tell her that it would be for whatever you're going to be eating. Actually there we talk about more if somebody else is giving it to her, but the point is though, that yeah, but so now if she saved on her own and ate less, then that'll belong to her. Another possibility would be that somebody else was makne to her. And he says that it's on condition that your husband has no reshus in it. So there also, so now we have that discussion in the Nedarim. Is it enough to say that he gives it to her as a present as long as your husband doesn't have reshus? Or does he actually have to add the words elamachat noisis when they send us fifth only for what you're going to be taking and putting into your mouth? Does he have to add those words? And then, and we talked about over there, the idea that Ran brought over there, that maybe what it is then it becomes hers only when she puts it in her mouth. And at that point, we can't say that the husband gets any rights over it because it's in her mouth already. So therefore, maybe that's required or maybe not. Maybe it's enough to say, we had a machlokas Rav and Shmuel over there. And Tosfos says that the halacha is like Rav over there. We talked about over there. Does everybody agree to that? But anyway, the point is that here are two examples. So here we're not getting into that level of detail, but the point is here are two examples of how it's conceivable for her to have animals of her own that the husband has no reshus in. Obviously, I mean, there are other ones as well. I mean, you have, yeah, the husband can give her an outright matana, but the Gemara is trying to find a more usual way of how it could happen.
But her father says, here, this is for you. I'm going to ask your husband, you shouldn't have anything to do with it.
So that's the thing. We learned in Nedarim, it depends. We had a machlokas with Av and Shmuel. Is that enough? Or does he actually have to say, Mashat noises when they sent us for fifth? But he actually has to say, this is for you, for what you're going to be putting in your mouth.
Yeah, but she's giving it to her garden, it's not going to her mouth.
Well, that's the point, in other words. So is that effective? So yeah. Next, we said ha'ola tikrav ola v'ashlom tikrav chola. We said the ola is brought as a regular ola, the shlom is brought as a shlomim, but it's sort of a hybrid between a shalmei nazir and a regular shlomim. We said the deadline is like a shalmei nazir, but there's no bread.
So here with the shlomim part, yes, she's going to have food.
Right. Anyways, yeah. Okay. So now the Gemara, now throughout the rest of this parak, we're going to have a few other examples like that, where we have a shlomim of a nazir, which is not brought as the full shlomim of a nazir. It's missing these things. It's missing the bread. It's missing the bread. So amale Shmuel la'avur bar'ihi. So Shmuel says to avur bar'ihi, loy teisav akarach, do not sit down on your feet, meaning in other words, stay standing, and tell me, abda amit lihodem milsa, until you tell me this thing, until you tell me what are all the cases where you bring a ram as a shalmei nazir, but you don't bring it, but it doesn't have the full dinim of a shalmei nazir, you don't bring it with the bread. And as Tosfos said on Amud Aleph, maybe you don't do the special things with the zeraya. So what are all those cases? Please explain it to me. So Avua answers, so Tosfos actually says two possibilities. One is that it's Avua answering with what Shmuel is asking him. So Shmuel asked him and he's answering, or that Shmuel is quoting that and he's saying that now based on the list that I'm going to tell you, there's a question and I want you to answer that question. So the list is like this. There are four cases where the ram does not require bread. Shaloi, the shalah. One is where it's his, one is where it's hers. The Gemara is going to go and explain in detail what we mean by his and hers. The shalah achar misa, another one where it's after death, where the nazir designated the animal and then died before he brought the korbanos. The shalah achar kapara, and another one where it's after kapara, where he designated an animal for the shlomim. It got lost. He designated a different one and brought it as the shlomim, and now the original one turned up. So all those four cases are the cases where you bring the ram, you still bring the ram as a shlomim, but there's no bread together with it. So now, let's figure it out. Shalah ha'da'amaran. The case of shalah, we just said, this is the case where the wife made a neder of Nazirus and her husband was made for it. Shaloi, what do we mean his? So ditnan, we learn later on in our perek, ha'ish madiras b'nei b'nazir, a man, a father has the ability, we're going to learn over there, it's halacha l'mosh b'sinai, to declare his son a nazir. Ve'eino ish madiras b'nei b'nazir, a woman does not have, a mother does not have that ability to be madir her son in Nazirus. If he wants to take Nazirus on himself, good, but she doesn't have the right to say, you are a nazir, and that it should stick.
Under
bar mitzvah. Under bar mitzvah, right. That we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta. So what happened with Shimshon and what happened with Shmuel, where how did they become Nazirim? So does it mean that in fact their fathers eventually imposed the Nazirus on them? Does it mean that maybe there's a Sicha we talked about, from the Rebbe, that maybe what it is more they educated them in such a way that they themselves should understand when they become older, they have to continue with the Nazirus that they were keeping until now. Al derech, like you have with a child who was Nisgayer, where you hopefully give them a chinuch that even when they're Bar Bas Mitzvah, and they have the choice to stay a yid or to revert to being a goy, hopefully they'll make the right choice. And it was a similar kind of thing.
The right choice, but halakhically.
Halakhically, they have, they can do either one they want, but it's still better to be part of the Jewish people, isn't it?
No, talking about to be a
Nazir. Oh, right. So that's what I'm saying. The Rebbe compares it to, in other words, with Shimshon, the Malach was telling them, and with Hannah, she was saying, we'll give them such a chinuch that for them, it'll become like a part of them. I am a Nazir, and I can't possibly be anything else. The same way, you're a doctor, a goyish baby, and you hopefully raise him in such a way that he thinks to himself, at Bar Bas Mitzvah, I can't possibly be anything other than a Yid. This is my identity. Anyway, a father has the ability to be madir his son, not a mother. But the Mishnah continues, Gilach, what happens if the son himself takes a haircut?
If this is just a question of socializing the child into being a nazir, then there is no difference between the mother and the father.
No, but the difference is that with the father, he actually declared him a nazir. That nazirus is chal, unless, as we're going to say, the son protests against it. As long as it's going to be, whether it's 30 days, whether it's his whole life, whatever, as opposed to if the mother imposes Nazirus on him, he's still not technically a Nazir. So the Mishnah continues, Gilach, if the son shaved his hair, showing that he doesn't want to be a Nazir, Osher Guchur Kraven, or his relatives did that, showing that they were protesting against what the father did, Micha, or if he protested and said he doesn't want to be a Nazir, Osha Michuhu Kravim, or the relatives protested on his behalf, in all those cases, there's no Nazirus. It's the equivalent kind of being made for the Nazirus. Therefore, so the same thing, Hoyul and Mois Stumin, so that's similar to our Mishnah. If there's unspecified money, Yiplu and Nadava, then we put it in the Nadava boxes. Mois Mefur Roshan, and if we have explicitly designated money, same thing, Tmei Chatas Yochol the Yamamalach, the money for the Chatas is thrown into the Yamamalach, because we can't have Hana from it. In fact, Yuri Mashas adds the words, loinen v'loimoy l'man, you're not allowed to have ana, but no, there's no mitzvah with it. Dmei ola yaviu ola, the money of the ola is still used to buy an ola, or moy l'man, and the ola would apply. Dmei shlomim yaviu shlomim, the money for the shlomim is used to bring a shlomim. V'nachol l'yamechad, and they're eaten for one day, v'ein tonen lechem, and they're not brought with bread. So that's the case of shaloi, that's the case of his korbanos, where we're saying that you wind up bringing a shlomim, but without the bread.
The katan is... Mechia is a real thing.
There's apparently enough of a machah, yeah. And we'll talk about it more in a few days, that's Hashem, and not Kofres, when we have that mission. Next. Shalacha misa menolon, what's the case after the Nazir died? Titania, we learn in a braisa, hamafush mois the Nazirus. Say a person designated money that's going to be brought for his Nazirus. So Me'ila, so you're not allowed to have Hana from it, but Me'ila doesn't apply to it. Tosfos points out that Loinanin might be Dirabbanan, it might even be Doraisa in this case, because After all, even a full-fledged shlomim, even if you have an actual animal for shlomim, like we said before, me'ilah doesn't apply to it. But the reason why me'ilah doesn't apply to this money, because that entire bundle of money, conceivably, you could use for the shlomim. Like this, practically speaking, the nazir is probably going to use some of it for the ochatas, some of it for the oila, etc. But it's still, he didn't specify. So he has the ability to take all that money and buy the best animal for a shlomim possible, and then he'll get more money and use that for the other two korbanos. Well, then again, me'ilah doesn't apply to a shlomim until it's shechted and the emurim are taken out, and then me'ilah applies to those. Mess, on the other hand, the bride's continues, if this nazir died, and there was this mois strumim left, you put it in a dava, then we put it in a dava again, because some of it was probably going to be used for a chatas, mois mefurashen, and if it was specified, mechatas yelach yamamelach, loinem v'lemoylen, again, the money for the chatas goes to the yamamelach, you can't have enough, me'ilah doesn't apply, may ola yavu ola, moylen behen, the money of the ola is used to buy an ola, and me'ilah applies to it, may shlomim yavu shlomim, and achol niyamecha benchon and lechem. So again, you have, there's the third case where you're bringing an animal that was supposed to be for a nazir, and here in the end, you are bringing it as a shlomim of a nazir, but not fully, because you're not bringing it with the bread. The fourth case, Shla'acha Kapara, Svarahu. So now, the case of La'acha Kapara, where he designated an animal, and then he lost it, and then he brought a different animal for a korban, and now he found this one, so that we don't have a braisa or a mishnah, but it's Svarahu. So it's a svara. So again, it's either ihi bar oven, it's either avuha bar ihi quoting this to Shmuel and saying that this is the fourth one and it must, and we get it from a svara, or it's Shmuel saying to avuha bar ihi, this is the fourth one, but I have a question on it. Anyway, so svara, yishalacha misa my tam deloy. Why is it that after the nazir died, we don't say that we say that the shlomim is still brought as a shlomim, but without the bread? Why is that? Because after all, it's not suitable for kapara, but the Gemara elsewhere expresses it with the idea in kapara la mason, that a mess doesn't need that kind of kapara of a curve. So then, shalacha kapara nami holei chazir kapara. So then after kapara also, now he doesn't need kapara anymore because he already brought the shlomim, so therefore it should have the same thing. So therefore, we're talking about the animal for the shlomim, so therefore the result is it still is brought as a shlomim. It had yusha of a shlomim, that can't be taken away from it, but it's brought as a shlomim of a nazir, but without the bread. Because the bread is only when there's nazirus over here, and the nazir is going to wave the bread together with the zroya and whatever and give them to the kohen. So the Gemara asks, the true lekka, is there no more than that? Are there no more cases than that? Go iko, you have another case. All the other shlomim of a nazir, which was shechted shloikim mitzvah, so not according to the mitzvah, meaning shloi l'shma. So the earlier part of the braisa talks about where the nazir brought a korban which turned out to be posel and then shaved his hair, and that turns out the korban was posel. So now you have dinim, which we're going to talk about later on in our masechta, as far as he has to regrow his hair. So now the braisa continues that ushar kol shami nazir shok and shloim mitzvasan, all the rest of the shlomim of the nazir, if he shefted them shloim lishma, shaved them, then they're kosher. As usual, most korbanos he shefted shloim lishma, the korban is kosher. It just doesn't count for the chayva of the owner, so he's not yotze, so he has to bring a different animal. Unlike a chatas and a korban pesach, a brought shelo lishma, then they're completely posel. You stop the avoda of them right there and take them out to burn them. Most other korbanos, if you do one of the avodas shelo lishma, then the korban is still kosher. You're just not yotze with it. The Gemara talks about it extensively at the beginning of Zvachim. Anyway, so and the braisa continues. And in such a case, you still have to bring a new shlomim, but you don't bring the bread with it, you don't bring the zoya, and you don't bring the zoya with it. So even though, in other words, this animal, this shlomim, so it was shecht, let's say the person shechted it, shaloi l'shma, so you still continue the avoda, but at that point, you don't continue with the bread and the zoya and the rest of that, you still bring it as a shlomim and it still has the deadline of a shlomim. So we see that there is another example, a fifth example, where you're bringing it without bread. The answer is kmitzvasan kachoshiv The answer is the answer is that Shmuel or Avu Habayi is only listing the ones which are brought according to their proper mitzvah. So Shaloikim Mitzvasim, like a Hoshu. He's not talking about a case where it was brought Shaloikim Mitzvasim, where the person did something wrong during one of the Avodas. It's true. In that case also, you don't bring it with the bread, but we're not listing that. We're focusing on cases where everything is being done the right way, and just there was a side thing that came in. The husband was made for his wife, or the son's Nezidus was mufer by himself or by his relatives, or where the person died, or where the person was nescapo. So within those, which are a normal standard operating procedure, then you have these four cases.
Okay, hang on.